The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
All right, good morning. We'll go ahead and get started. Isn't it nice they put my name right there on the screen? That's helpful. And they spelled it right, which is really helpful. So, my name is Christy Wright. I'm going to talk to you guys this morning. I hope I'm talking not at you, but to you about what does it mean to be ready for school. I've been in classical Christian education for 12 years. I serve as the assistant head of school, or as my headmaster likes to call me, the assistant to the head of school. And I also teach a little bit in the upper school, in the top few grades. I teach rhetoric and oversee senior thesis. The very first year, in 2007, I taught first and second grade, and in the last 12 years, I have taught between first and 12th grade, a variety of subjects, but I've taught all of those grades, which means I've taught absolutely every grade except kindergarten, and I'm here to talk to you about kindergarten. And so that's how it works, right? So it's just like an administrator, you know, they're trying to tell you what to do. And I have two kids in our school. A third one will join the ranks this fall. We have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old. We'd all just had birthdays, so I'm trying to remember. A 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and then a 3.5-year-old. And so it's been nice that the past few years trying to figure out what it looks like to be a parent with kids in a classical school. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. I want to go ahead and make a deal with you, if that's all right. I haven't had a lot of sleep in the last few days because my husband's been out of town since the start of the week at another convention. And then I had four kids trying to pack them and get them ready to go to three different houses in three different cities, not to mention the dog, the cat. Just I don't even know where the cat is or who's taking care of the cat. But it's been a lot getting ready. So here's my deal. I won't care if you yawn if you don't care if I yawn. Is that fair? All right. So before we do get started, I want to say thank you so much for being here and for coming. I feel so humbled to get to address you. I really see you as peers. I know there are people here who've been teaching longer than maybe I've even been alive, and I do feel really humbled to get to present something to you today. I want to start by saying how grateful I am for a couple ladies, one who is here today. I mentioned that I've taught every grade in our school except kindergarten, and so you might be wondering, what does she have to bring to the table? And I have Megan Marsh, who's one of our kindergarten teachers. We have a couple, but Megan's been with us for quite a long time, and she's really just been a person for me to exchange ideas with and nod or nod this way sometimes, and she's been a great listening ear. And then a very dear friend who is not at our school but at a sister school in Nashville, and by the way, our school is in Cookeville, Tennessee, in Middle Tennessee, Highlander Academy. But a very dear friend of mine, Jill King, who's here, I'm so thankful. She says she would run the laser show today. So if things get too boring, just nudge her. Maybe she'll start doing cartwheels for us. But she has been such a great resource. She teaches kindergarten at Jonathan Edwards Classical Academy. I don't know, is it in Nashville? White's Creek. And so she's just been a wealth of experience and opinions and all kinds of excellent. She's just an excellent resource. And so I have been doing one of the things that I'm going to ask any administrators here to do, which is to listen. I've been listening a lot to those who are teaching our 5- and 6-year-olds. So by a show of hands, if you're an administrator, would you put your hand up? I'd just like to know who my audience is. Okay, great. If you are a pre-K or kindergarten teacher, maybe into first grade, okay, that's great. Welcome. If you have been teaching at a classical school, yours now or another one, for maybe more than 4 or 5 years, would you put your hand up? Okay. And then if you're pretty new to to those grades. All right, that's great. That helps me know who my audience is so I can address you guys more specifically. So the reason I'm presenting today on kindergarten is I had two questions come up in the last few years. And I better start that timer. The first question comes, I want to start with a story of the Highland Rim Academy class of 2027. And this is my eldest son's class. We enrolled him in kindergarten in 2014. We enrolled him into our school. He had no preschool experience. He'd been at home. We have a nanny who comes to our home and cares for our children. So he's had some great one-on-one attention. I felt like he was really ready to go and super excited to have our first child start school. And so he starts in 2014. He goes into a class of 12 students, five boys, and seven girls. And I wish I had some kind of fancy, exciting things to look at here. That's not my gifting. And so listen carefully with me. I want to tell you the story of these five boys. So five excellent, bright-eyed boys coming into kindergarten for the first time. The first boy, after about a year or so, we noticed he wasn't reading as well. He wasn't keeping up. Behaviorally, he was really not keeping up with his classmates. And for a couple years, we made this recommendation to the parents, consider maybe letting him repeat. You know, his grades were fine. I don't even know what grades mean in kindergarten, and we've actually done some good work there. But he was passing, but we just saw some signs that were not great and said, you know, you might want to consider holding him back. And the parents said, no, we think he can do it, and we don't want to discourage him in that way, which I understand. And so I believe it was in the second grade, we had made, again, a strong recommendation that he repeat, and he went ahead. And even, you know, into the first quarter, things weren't going well for this young man. And we said, would you really consider, even mid-year, which is pretty drastic for us, having him repeat, you know, go back into that class? And his parents said, no, it's so discouraging for him. We don't want to do that. And so by Christmas, they came to us and said, we were wrong. We really need to have him go back. So halfway through the year, this young man was struggling so much, he went back to the grade behind him. He's doing really well now. He's still in our school. I'm so thankful for that. That was our first boy. Our second boy started falling behind a little bit in the first grade. He was just slow. He was littler. He was just kind of slower than his classmates. He was bright, but wasn't keeping up as well with his classwork. His parents actually, his dad took a church, and they moved away from our school, and I was good friends with his mother and kept up, and she was homeschooling, and they've recently moved to an area with a great ACCS school. And so we were just talking about the, you know, how exciting for her kids to get to enroll there. And she said, you know, I really think we're going to have him repeat a grade. I know that he's just kind of slower. And again, this is, these kids are now going into the fifth grade. So through the year, she's like, yeah, I think it might be best if he repeats. And I always wondered, I wonder what that would have looked like if he had stayed with us, because we saw signs of that as well. Our third boy, again, behaviorally and academically, was just struggling. And we made that same recommendation to parents after a year or two, like, do you want to think about holding him back? He's technically passing, but we really have some concerns and think it might be in his best interest. And they really pushed forward, and we tried to even come on a little, you know, we really think it would be in his best interest to hold back. And pushed forward, had a terrible third grade year. And, of course, that's on the shoulders of an eight-year-old. Had a terrible year. And then him and his older sister, who was really thriving in our school, left. And they homeschool now. And that was really, really difficult. That was our third boy. Remember, we had five in that class. And the next boy has been a really fantastic reader, the best in his class. But he was a little squirrely, really had a hard time focusing and paying attention. When he could pay attention, he was on it. But really, you know, off days and on days, and really struggled to keep up, to pay attention, to do the schooling aspect. And so starting in second grade, that little boy, you know, teacher said, you might want to think about repeating, didn't repeat. Third grade, talked about it all year, should we? The teacher said, you know, I think he could go on. His academics are fine. And so he did go on to fourth grade. The gap continues to widen. And just an ongoing yearly conversation about this boy and whether he should repeat. And he is going on to fifth grade. This one's my son. And wow, my husband's here. It's been a really hard decision. What is in the best interest of this child that we have. And I don't know that I would consider his schooling a success right now, even though he's a great reader. He's at the top of his class in that area. But other areas, his schooling just it's not what I imagine success would look like. That's our fourth boy. Our fifth boy's fine. He's still with us. No problems. He's doing really well. He's thriving. So I see this class year after year, and they're just kind of dropping. And I think, what is wrong? Do you agree with me that this is not acceptable? That 4 out of 5 boys not succeeding is not acceptable? And so as a parent, of course, I'm trying to problem solve with our son. We're trying to figure out what's going on with him, what are his needs, and what's happening with him. And then as an administrator, what is going on with this class? And so it really led me to ask these questions, and especially with boys, because in our country, boys are not doing well. We'll talk a bit more about that later. But I really wanted to take some time and say, what happened here? How can we keep this from ever, ever happening again? Because as difficult as this is for us, the adults, because the teachers are struggling too, and they love these kids, and their parents are struggling. They're the ones who are struggling even at home with the homework and all those things. Most of the struggle is on the backs of 5, 6, 7-year-olds, right, who have to come to school every day knowing that they're not succeeding, or like my son, not even knowing. And that's really, really tough for them. So that's my first question. The second question that brought me here today has come from parents of toddlers and preschoolers. And they come in for open house or a tour or something like that. And so this is more as an administrator. And they ask this question. I'm sure you've heard it too. How can I prepare my 3-year-old for a really rigorous education? We want it. We want to do this. But what can we do? And so I'm thinking, that's a really great question. Thank you so much for asking, and trying to formulate what are the best answers I can provide to these parents we want to serve. We have these great schools, but we have to think about what do we tell our parents who are asking how could we tell them to prepare their children for these schools? And sometimes those parents don't even frame it as a question. They come having the answer, and the answer sounds like this. I'm starting to teach my 3-year-old to read to get ready for your really hard school. And I say, please don't do that. Send that boy outside. Tell him to get in the mud. Put him in a tree. Please don't do that. But that's their assumption, right? And I understand academic rigor would seemingly require academic rigor even beforehand. And so I'm hearing this. I'm hearing this one really hurts my heart. Mom and dad come in for a tour, and they say, my wife quit her job so she can stay home with our children. This is great. And but when we decided to go to your school, we sent our 2-year-old to Mother's Day out so she can be ready for your school. And I'm thinking, I understand. My kids are being cared for by someone else too. But mom's home, and you think you have to send them away to get ready for our school? That's not great. It's not the best. It's not terrible, but it's not the best. And so I have these questions coming to me, and this is what prompted 2 years of looking at what does it mean to get ready for a classical Christian education for the 2-year-old, the 3-year-old, the 4-year-old, 5-year-old. What does it mean to get ready? And so that's why I'm here today. I'm here as a parent. I'm here as an administrator, because I've been spending my time looking at this, talking to fellow peers in my field and saying, what are you guys doing? Let's problem solve together. And so I have 3 goals today. The first goal I have is to validate what they already know. And for those who are in the classrooms first, kindergarten first, pre-K, the they is you. You, if you've been in your classroom for more than 5 years, more than 3 years, you know almost all the stuff I'm gonna tell you. And so I'm sorry I should have started with that, that should have been in the synopsis. You already know all this stuff. But you know these things because you've seen them day in and day out. And sometimes we administrators, you guys out there listening, administrators, sometimes we have to go look at the research, and we're harder headed, and it takes us time to come to these conclusions. And so often I would research, I would pull data from our own school, I'd read all this stuff about brain development, and I would go to our kindergarten teachers and say, listen, I had this epiphany. And, there Mrs. Marsh is saying, yeah, I could have told you that. She's too sweet. She probably just nodded and smiled, but she's thinking, I already knew that, because she's there. And so my hope is to, for those of you who've been with the littlest among us for years, I hope to validate the things that you already know, okay? And so that's my goal. what you know, and we'll talk about this more later, but what you know, what I'm referring to is, what does it mean for a very young child to be ready for school? You know when they come in, if they're ready or not, don't you? You know, right? You do. I see some sad looks on your faces because I know that that hurts when you see a child come in who isn't ready because you think they're not ready. They're going to suffer for this, right? And maybe you will a little bit too. And so it's a difficult thing, but you already know, and what you guys know empirically is what teams of professors and grad assistants spend their time researching so that we administrators can finally get on board with you. And so we'll get into the meat of those things later. My second goal is to prompt a conversation and a discussion about school readiness, about retention, about the best way for us to love our families that we say that we're partnering with, and also to love the most vulnerable people in our school. There's so many things that demand our attention in a K-12 program, right? And I'm thankful classical schools tend to be K-12. I think that's incredible. I wouldn't change that for the world. I like that at our school we're all on one campus, and I love that so much. But especially sometimes even the older students tend to get more of our attention. And I want this to be some space and time for you to think about your school, to do some assessment. I know for me in these workshops, I'm listening, I'm learning. I hope you will learn from me. But most of what I walk away with is all these notes about what I'm hearing and, you know, kind of filtering that through our program and all these notes I have for us to do later. And so I just hope this is an hour for you to sit and think about this topic of school readiness. I want to also encourage the use of phrases like developmental readiness and school readiness. Those aren't new. You've heard those before. But I think we've got to shift away from this cultural standard that we just simply go to school when we're five. And we have to start rephrasing that and reframing that in the context of, are we ready for school? Some are ready at five. Not everybody. And so that's my goal, is just start to really frame that conversation. Every parent affirms that their little precious is an individual, that they're unique, and they are. I agree with that. But then there's this disconnect. We just want to lump them in together with this group of students just because they were born around the same cluster of months, right? And so I'm not against standardization, but we can either standardize the curriculum or we can standardize the children. And I really don't like the idea of a standard issue five-year-old, plus I've never seen one before. And so what I do like is the idea of a standardized curriculum with some flexibility, of course, and then a group of students who are aligned developmentally with that curriculum, regardless of how old they are. That's different, right? That's different than what our culture is practicing. So I just want to share the discussion that we've been having at our own school for the last couple years and see what ideas or phrases we have developed that might serve you, and then, of course, give you some time to come up with your own ideas and thoughts and get them on paper and take them back to your schools. My third goal is to give practical encouragement and ideas. At the end, I'll tell you some of the changes we've made at our school and what maybe some resources to put in your hands. So let's start with the facts, okay? Discipling and educating children should always be more than what the facts say, but it shouldn't be less. So I don't want to boil, you know, discipleship down to studies. All right, we're not going to do that. But we have to know what the studies say, and we want to be well-informed. Educators in classical Christian education have plenty of reasons to dismiss a lot of the research coming out today, and a lot of what comes out of universities, because our presuppositions are so different. But we should at least be informed of what the research is telling us so that we can make good choices. Before we get into some of those facts, I want to start with what will be a very long, so let's sit and get comfortable, but I really want to define school readiness, okay? So when I think about school readiness, and I do the incoming assessments for all of our new students, not kindergarten. Our kindergarten teacher does that. Our first grade teacher will help with that. But I do that for most of the older students. And I think that we should apply the same questions. When I think of an incoming fifth grader, we should be applying the same questions as to an incoming kindergartner. And this is what this looks like. This is the question I ask when I'm enrolling an older student, and we should ask the same question of a younger student. What does success look like to enroll this particular child in this particular class at this particular time? So what does success look like to enroll this particular child in this particular class at this particular time? And this is what I think school readiness is. So we're going to look at those three factors just as we get this definition ready to go. The individual child, the group of students, the class. We don't just enroll kids. We enroll them into a group of students, right? And then the timing of that enrollment. So our first factor of school readiness is the individual child. We must ask ourselves, is this child meeting the baseline for admission? For kindergarten, for pre-K, really for any grade, all the way up. And I don't want to assume that you even have a baseline. I remember our first few years, we didn't have any kind of test. At that point, we were like, you want to pay us? You want to come to our school? You're in. And we didn't even have any kind of assessment or measures or anything like that. So I don't want to assume that that's the case. You need a baseline for admission. And I'm gonna submit to you three different types of baselines to look for and show you where some of the errors we made as a school have been and how we're correcting that. The first baseline is an academic baseline. An academic baseline. So I know that most children are geniuses when they apply. I know that. I know it because their parents tell me. Their moms, especially. All the boys are going to be engineers like their daddy, right? And all the girls are linguistically gifted. I know this. I've heard the parents tell me. I'm a parent. I know this. Parents can't believe how much they can remember or how quickly they can learn. I know. You know why? Because the Lord made them to do that. They are made for it. And in classical education, we even have this category called the grammar stage. We believe that they are so built for memorization and for learning that we give it a name. We call it, Dorothy Sayers called it pole parrot, right? Give it to them, they give it right back. So yes, I know that they've learned a lot. I know that your three-year-old knows all the letters. I get that. But they're kind of built for it. Now, of course, there could be some developmental problems where that's not the case. But most kids are ready to go. They've got that stuff. They're ready to go because God has put it in them to receive those things. So these things, I think these are the easy things. And I say that I don't want to denigrate the learning of letters and the learning of numbers, because that is, for you guys here in these grades, this is your life's work, right? And I say they're easy because some of the other categories, some of the other baselines aren't as easy. And you can't just sit down and do it. And so these things are a little easy, but they tend to be the only things that parents are really paying attention to. Because first of all, most of our parents don't work with young children. They don't work with classes. They're not... You know, they haven't given their life to learning about early childhood development, and that's fine. We all shouldn't be in that field. But all they know is what they see, and we're such a pragmatic society, we tend to focus on the things that we can see, like the fruit, and disregard all the things it takes to grow that fruit, right? Classical Christian education is this bastion of sanity in the world where we still believe in invisible things, don't we? And a healthy understanding of school readiness is really no different. There are invisible things at work, and we have to shine a light on them. So when a student assesses with us and isn't quite ready in the academics, and by academics I mean letter recognition, number recognition, colors, shapes, okay? I'm not super worried if we have a few weeks or a few months to get them there, because they're built for that. Give me a kid for 3 weeks, and I can sit down and teach them their letters and their numbers if they're developmentally ready, all right? My own children, like I said, I have two in school and then a third one who's going into school. I'm not saying this is the best way. I'm just saying that in our household, because I'm working full-time, I don't sit down and do a lot of letters and stuff. Now, we do all the reading in the world, okay? There are books in every nook and cranny of my house. Most of them are all torn apart, which is what it should look like if you're doing it right with young kids. But I don't have a lot of time to, like, sit down, let's learn letters. In fact, when they're four and they're getting ready to start school the next year, it really is like spring break when I'm like, now's the time, you have to know those letters and numbers. And we sit down and we do some of that stuff then. But all three of my children who've gone into school, their first assessment, you know, the teacher's like, great in a lot of areas, but they got to learn the letters, and we would have to come back. So I tell you that not like you should not teach letters and numbers to small children, only that the academic stuff is the easy stuff. But it gets so much more of our attention than the other things. And then also, you know, again, I don't spend a lot of time on those things, but the kids I've had go through school have been the top readers in their class for several years. And I just don't think that you have to start with your 2 or 3 year old and do the letters and do the numbers. There are other things you have to do, but the academics need to be there too. You can't start at our school until you can, you know, recognize your lowercase and uppercase and recognize numbers to 20. Those things have to be in place, but they shouldn't have all of our attention, and it doesn't mean that they won't be really successful as especially readers, because I'm thinking about, you know, primary school and letters and stuff like that. So our kids didn't get all that preschool stuff, but they really did succeed when it came to reading specifically. The second type of baseline is developmental readiness. And this is the one we're going to camp out on today. Is this child developmentally ready for school? I get it. They're a genius. They know all the grandma and grandpa's phone numbers by heart. Fantastic. But are they developmentally ready? Do they have the fine motor skills they need? What about balance? What about attention span? What about conflict resolution? Can they focus? Can a child sequence tasks and keep up with them? Go to your seats and get out your red crayon. Can they do that? Can they remember that? Development can be helped along by parents and teachers. There are things that we ought to be doing with our babies and toddlers and preschoolers that aid in development, but much of it is based on a child's individual rate of social or mental development. And even if certain things weren't fostered as they ought to have been, these things just take time. If academic readiness is like making a sandwich, I'm hungry, I want to eat in about 5 minutes, sit down and make a sandwich. If that's academic readiness, then developmental readiness is like making a really great soup. You can put it together in 20 minutes, but nobody wants to eat that, right? You want a soup to sit and to simmer as long as it can, really. If you can let it sit overnight, even better. And so academic readiness is important. Please don't hear me say that kids don't need their letters and numbers. Please don't hear me say that. What I'm saying is that's a great start. But even more importantly is what kind of container, instead of just starting to fill that container, what kind of container do we have? Is this a container that can be filled? Our headmaster has this great example when he talks to parents about developmental readiness. He says, he points to a bookshelf he has in his office. He said, if I asked your 5-year-old to reach up to the top of that bookshelf, we're not surprised that they can't do it. We wouldn't say it's a failure of that child. We would say they haven't grown yet. Well, we talk a lot about development, physical development, and that's in our brains. We make that very different because we can physically see that child's smaller, that child's plumper, that child has, you know, long, skinny arms, and that child, whatever. And those things, we say, yeah, there's room for that. All the children are different. But we forget that that's the same as what's going on inside their little hearts and minds, too. That there's a development aspect there that you just can't. Some children, you say, you can't require that of them. My daughter, who's going into the third grade, my sister happened to, just coincidentally, be our nanny for a period of years, and she had a 4-year-old at home, too. She said, if it's okay, I'm going to go through letters with the girls. I said, yeah, thank you. That's fantastic. I appreciate that. And after a few months, she said, you know, can we talk? Your daughter really isn't picking the letters up, and mine is, and it's kind of, but I'm not a teacher. Why don't you tell me what to do? And so I was like, okay, well, this is what I would do, you know, and kind of walked her through the process. She said, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I said, tell you what, I'm home for Christmas. We'll sit down together and I'll see what I see. I'm telling you, this kid, nothing. Nothing's getting in there. I can say that because she's mine. And she's the top reader in her class now. So nothing was getting in there. And I thought, well, maybe something's wrong with her. I mean, time will tell. But I left it and I picked back up at spring break because I can parent my children on breaks. No, sorry. I'm kidding. I picked up at spring break, and she picked it up like this. She just wasn't ready. She wasn't, I don't know what's going on in her brain, but she just wasn't ready, and she just needed a little bit of time. Well, what if that had been 6 months more, or 6 months more, right? For her, things were clicking a little more for her right at the last minute there at spring, getting ready to assess and come into school. But what if that hadn't been the case? What if she needed another year? Imagine putting her in the classroom. Nothing. Nothing, right? So let's talk about that third type of readiness. We have academic readiness, developmental, and the third one really is a subcategory of development, but it's emotional and social readiness and maturity, too. Maturity is an important word to use here. Is the child socially ready for school? Do they have emotional maturity? My friend Jill told me a story recently of a child who came in a year ago in the spring, was 5, knew all the academics, out of the park, got it, ready. Wouldn't separate from his mother, screamed and had fits for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. She did 3 different assessments. You can nod and tell me if I'm getting your facts right. She did 3 different assessments with this child. They do a shadow day there at their school. So she said, you know, why don't we do it? Why don't we just try the shadow? Came in, you know, she had a spot for him there at the desk, wouldn't sit there, sat in the back turned. Did you tell me his back was turned? Okay, not going well. Let's try again. Comes back in, screaming fits, fits that I have never as a parent experienced with my own children, and they're not perfect. Okay, would not do the tasks. Knew all the academics in the world. Is this a learner? Is this child ready to learn? But he knows his letters, and he knows his numbers, and I bet he might even know what a rhombus is. He can't learn if he's sitting in the back with his back turned, if he's screaming that he doesn't want to be there, if he won't separate from his mother. And I'm not talking about I know, they're all nervous. I get that, but this is clearly out of the ordinary. Kids have to be prepared emotionally and socially to come to school. They have to take on the posture of a learner. And I mean that physically. I mean, they physically have to be able to sit down in a chair for a period of time, right? Now, you guys should be doing all the things to help them physically with that. But there are some points in the day where they just have to sit and be still, control their sillies. We say blocks, stacked, right? Ready position, all the things. You have to have that self-control. They need the physical posture of a learner. That's a developmental thing. You can train. But if it's not there, you can't just get it done in a day or in a week, okay? They also, when I talk about the posture of a learner, that's really the frame of mind, too. I don't care if the child comes to school reading if they're going to be throwing fits in the back of the classroom and refuse to cooperate, right? They're not taking the posture of a learner. Now, so much of the job of a pre-K or kindergarten teacher is to teach them what is the posture of learning. What does it look like to do school, which is different than learning? Not entirely different. There's an overlap, but it's not exactly the same thing. Okay. How do we sit? How do we obey? How do we serve others? How do we fall in line, really? And they have to be able to take the posture of a learner. And so they need emotional stability. Other people have to be able to discipline them. They have to have some conflict resolution skills. And I want to note that kids don't need, there's so much talk about socialization. And I've had so many people say, oh, why don't you send your kids to preschool? Why do you just like store them at home? Like I have them locked away in a closet. Like, why do you just have them at home stashed away? They should be in a preschool with all the other children. I'm like, have you been in a group of like 23-year-olds? I really don't want my 3-year-old learning from a huge group of 3-year-olds. Like that's, anyway, I want to be clear that I don't think that children need to be in these huge groups of children to be socialized, okay? We've had 2 or 3 siblings at home, depending on the time. Siblings can offer great socialization. Church groups, friends, cousins, this is great socialization. And so don't hear me say, send your 2-year-old off to a huge group of 2-year-olds so they can be socialized. That's not. I don't think that's necessary. I don't know that's always very helpful. But socialization can happen in really small groups. And you know, it's better that way because then you can do real discipline and real discipleship, right? Then you can say, hey, I don't think your heart, I know you said, I'm sorry, but I don't think your heart is sorry. Can we keep shepherding? And that happens in these really small, intimate groups, which I'm very thankful for. A few other qualities as we're thinking about the independent child, okay? So consider these when you're looking at the individual, sorry, did I say independent, individual child. If you have an independent child, that might be a red flag. But as you're thinking about an individual child, birth order is going to matter. Parental support, what level? And you might not know with a brand new student, but if this is the 3rd kid coming in, you should know that family pretty well. Are they in a traditional family or are they being raised by grandparents? We have a few kids raised by grandparents, and I am so thankful for those grandparents. But there is a reason that God gives children to younger people and not to grandparents. Grandparents parent differently, don't they? I'm so thankful for them. But that's another factor if you say, you know, we're moving on, but this is going to take a lot of hard work, and the child's not going to like any of it. Is grandma going to be able to handle that and manage that? Maybe, maybe, but maybe not. Are there other disabilities with the child that we should know about? What about the nature of this child? Are they particularly shy or timid, which is fine? But these are things to consider, and I don't think that these things affect enrollment, just to be clear. I think that when you have a kid who is borderline, that these are the kinds of things you think about. So, for example, our third child, his name is William, and we sent our two first kids on. They have spring birthdays. We sent them on to school when they were five and a half. With William, he actually has the earliest birthday. His birthday is in early March, and we decided to hold him back until he was six. He turned six this year. He'll be starting school. Bless his heart, he doesn't understand that's not him. You know, we keep saying, it's us, it's not you, and he's smart enough to go, I don't know, but that really is the case. He said, we have learned how to be a better mommy and daddy, and we think this is better for you. He takes it very personally. But when we look at that child, well, he's number three out of four. He's not a leader in our home. We just naturally call on the older kids, right? We try to do better than that, but it honestly just doesn't happen. We go to the older kid because I know it's going to get done. My second is our oldest daughter. She's going to get it done. They're a little more responsible, right? And so he's not put in a natural leadership position in our home. And I thought, you know what I want for him? I want him to have a natural leadership position in the classroom, and he can have that if he's a year older. And that's unique to him, right? That's me looking at him as an individual child. I also know that that little boy needs to move all of his body all of the time. And he's either sobbing because someone hurt his feelings, or he's throwing punches. And those are his two extremes. And I think he needs to simmer a little bit more at our home before we send him out into the world. But that's unique to him, okay? Not all of my kids. So I want to encourage you to lean into this individual aspect when you're thinking about kids. When you're communicating with parents, parents feel strongly in the individuality of their child, sometimes too much, but they feel strongly that their child is unique and individual, but they seem to forget this value, and they just want to lump everybody in together. One group of kids, all the same age, and I'm encouraging you to lean into that. Say, you know, mom and dad, you know that your kid is individual. Yes, he is, and God has a plan for him. Yes. Because he's an individual, can we counsel you in this way? That is unique and individual to your child. Remind them of that and use that as a connection for why you think something, you know, a hard decision might be best for their kid. So the first factor when we think about school readiness is that individual child. Again, what does success look like to enroll this particular child into this particular class at this particular time? And so now I want to look at the second factor, which is a group of students or a class. We have to consider how this child what their success will look like into a particular when we enroll them into a particular group of students. Now, I do think this is much more important when I'm looking at older grades because, quite frankly, I know what the class is like. I know that this class is really strong in math but weak in reading. I know this class has a lot of girl drama. I know this class is just weird. I mean, you know, whatever the case is. I know you have them too. I know you do. It's not just us. And that's not always, we don't always know that about our kindergartners or pre-K classes when we're enrolling for the first time. But I still think that you should give it consideration, even if you're like, yeah, we considered it, moving along, it doesn't really apply here. One thing this might look like for maybe a new pre-K or new kindergarten class is, this child is super young. We might have some developmental concerns, but oddly, all of the students enrolling this year all have spring and summer birthdays. So this year, with this group, it might be okay, right? And so think about that. Again, probably more important for older kids, but I do think that could be an aspect to consider when we think about school readiness. The third factor for consideration in school readiness is timing. Timing. What does success look like to enroll this particular child into this particular class at this particular time? Most of the time, I think that you'll find if a child is not ready for school, it will simply be a timing issue. Sometimes we get children in where there's maybe a developmental delay and there's a problem, and I don't know that child will ever be ready for our program. That's heartbreaking. We deal with those every couple years. Those are really, really hard. I would love to see our schools find better solutions than what we currently have. But most of the time, it's just going to be a timing issue. And even so, this is still really hard because parents have pride. And they should. That's their child. And they'll think that something is wrong. And you'll say, well, there's nothing wrong with the fact that my five-year-old can't reach to the top of the bookshelf or slam dunk. There's nothing wrong there. They're just not developmentally ready, right? But it feels like your child is broken. And I know that. And we have to know that going in as well. Maybe, you know, for some families, they're like, well, this is our last one, and they're going to go into school so that mom can go back to work. And, like, we have these financial goals and these other things. Like, there's a system that needs to work, and it's not going to work. That's hard. For some families, they're having to reconsider all kinds of things, and there are other effects if that child doesn't go into school at that time. Just the cultural norm and the stigma. But these buddies have been in nursery and Sunday school together, and they're supposed to go to school together, and they're best friends. And now you're telling me that they shouldn't start? That's really hard. It really is. And this isn't my area, but I know enough to know about school administration. We have to consider what happens to the budget when we say no. We've got to make classes. We've been around for 12 years, and we're financially healthier than we've ever been. I'm so thankful for the work that our board and our head of school have done there. But bodies still matter. Every single one does. And I understand, especially administrators, I'm with you. I feel that too. Teachers, that's not your job to think about that. You should not be worrying about making budget, right? Someone else is worrying about that. You shouldn't be worrying about that. But you have to understand when you go to an administrator and say, I think we should say no this time, that they have to deal with that too. And just as a way to empathize and understand that there are a lot of difficult components going on when we say, please wait. This year, for 2019 enrollment, we had 18 applications for kindergarten. That was returning student, like current families and new families. But we had 18 applications, and we asked 4 of them to wait. That is a big deal. One of them, there's probably a more serious developmental issue. I don't know that child will ever be ready for our school. I hope that is the case. But we said maybe enroll in a kindergarten class somewhere else and come back. Maybe that year of schooling will make a difference. We're not really sure what we're looking at with that child, if it was just, you know, behavior or development. But the other 3 was simply, this child's not ready yet, but they will be in a year. But that, I mean, out of 18, to say 4, come back later, that's a big deal for us. That's like a $24,000 decision. That's huge. That's huge. You might also lose a family to another school, and they say, well, if you won't enroll them, they will down the road, and now they're lost and they won't come back. Sometimes they say they'll come back. They may not, right? And I don't know about your community. This is why it's so important to think about it as a specific school in your community. We are the only K-12 private school in our whole town, and there's another K-8, and I hear rumors of, like, other private schools. I don't even know if they're there or not there, kind of in towns next to us, but there's not a private school culture at all. And so if you want a classical education, you can homeschool. There's a great homeschool community in our town. But if you want your kid in a private classical Christian school, we're the only game in town. If you just want them in a private school, you have one other option, and it's not going to be a K-12. So their options are limited. But we also have great public schools in our town, or so I'm told. I don't know that for myself. And so you have to think about, you might have 2-3 other classical schools if you're in a larger area, and you're risking saying no to that family for good. I know that is really difficult. Teachers, again, you don't need to bear that burden, but you have to know that that's part of what's going on. And if your administrator's a little resistant, that's probably part of why, okay? So just have that in the back of your mind, not the front of your mind if you're a teacher. So let's recap. What is school readiness? Enrolling a particular child into a particular class at a particular time while considering both academic and developmental readiness markers that are appropriate to your school and your community. This is it's very important that you consider what works for you. And before we go on, I want to say this. School readiness is not the same as intelligence or learning. This means that we have to look for specific markers for school readiness that distinguish schooling from learning. So mom says, he just remembers everything. Great, good, I'm sure he does. He's probably very intelligent. He's probably a good learner. But that's not the same as whether a child can do school well. Okay, our son, I said earlier, he has struggled with his schooling. He is a very good learner. And, you know, this is recorded. He's failing math tests left and right. And then the standardized test score comes in and says he's in the 80th percentile. And I'm like, what? He's learning fine. He's not schooling well. Does that make sense? Because he wants to take the math test in 2 hours or more. And everybody else, you know, 30 minutes and they're done, right? And so that's a schooling. But here's the thing. The learning happens in schools for us, for this community. Schooling's the name of the game. They've got to be able to have a posture for learning. And so schooling matters. When somebody comes and says, well, my child is really, really bright, but they don't do so well with structure. I'm like, but structure's what we have. Especially in a classical school, we ought to have structure, right? So I want to create the dichotomy, but also you have to have them both, especially in a private school context, all right? And so schooling matters. Just because a child is very intelligent doesn't mean, again, if they're throwing a fit in the back because they would rather color than cut, I don't care if they can read already because they're not ready for schooling. So let's look at the research just a little bit, and a disclaimer. I haven't provided these citations anywhere. If you'll email me if you want all that research, it's not as fun as it looks reading it all, by the way. I'll email you all that I have if you're interested in any of that. Also, this is a small sampling. I'm like, here's one random study, but I've looked pretty broadly, and I'm trying to give you a good summation. So let's talk about the research between relationship of age to academic or social success, because timing is a part of readiness, timing. So what does the research say about the age as it correlates or relates to their academic success or social success? So here's just broader context. A 2000 study that was published in the Journal of Early Education and Development. I'm going to give you a quote. I'm going to spare you all this talk about slope and intercept. I don't even really know what that is. I hear the algebra teachers talking about it a lot. It's all in the studies. Like I said, it's not as much fun as it looks like. But I'm going to give you a statement from the conclusion of this study. Okay. In short, it is not unreasonable to conclude that debates about age may be more of a theoretical than a practical importance. Now, hear me out. Nevertheless, consideration of age of entry to school could be an additional factor that merits some limited weighting when integrated with other potential influential factors and processes. Okay, what are those other factors? Especially having to do with the child's social, emotional, and cognitive competencies. So what they're saying is, age is important, it's really not the biggest thing, but you know what is the biggest thing? Social, emotional, and cognitive competencies. And this study is called The Age of Entry to Kindergarten and Children's Academic Achievement and Socio-Emotional Development that was put out by the National Institution of Child and Health Development Early Child Care Research Network. The research isn't fun, okay? And so you can look at age if you want. It's not the most important thing, but you have to look at these other factors. So if age is not the foolproof gauge, what is? If you read any kind of research for any amount of time on school readiness, you're going to come across this phrase, executive functioning. Executive functioning. What is it? It's a set of three neurocognitive skills, a set of three skills. Working memory is the first. Working memory. Can a child or an adult, we have these skills too, follow a series of commands? What about something multi-step? I hear this all the time from the teachers as the students get older. They're really great in math, but multi-step math problems are problematic. You know why? Working memory. I'm trying to do long division with my 10-year-old, and he's breaking down crying because he's trying to hold 1,000 little steps in his head, and it's too much. Working memory, that's what that is, executive functioning. The second skill is inhibitory control. Inhibitory control. This regulates impulses. How important is that for schooling? Can you control your body? Can you control your mind? Can you make your mind think about this thing and not that thing? Can you make your feet do what you need them to do right now? I tell my children, I need you to control yourself, or I have to control you, or someone else will have to control you, and you are made to be free. You don't want someone else controlling you. Isn't that part of what we're doing in this whole education? And it works even with 2 and 3-year-olds. Control your own self. With my 3-year-old, I say, you can either hold your own hands or I'll have to hold them. She says, I will hold my own hands. I mean, I'm not going to do anything to her but hold her hand, but she knows. I don't want someone controlling me. I want to control myself. That's a good thing to encourage, and it's necessary for schooling, isn't it? It's necessary. And the third skill is cognitive flexibility. How much can their brains stretch and bend? Think about touching your toes physically, right? The same idea cognitively. Can they switch gears? Can they go from, all right, math is done now, and now we're going to pull out our reading books? Self-control. But also, can they just cognitively, like, can they do that with you? What about when a sub comes in? Can they switch gears for a sub? Most of you probably remember reading in your studies about the 1960s experiment with marshmallows. The marshmallow experiment, you put a four-year-old in front of a marshmallow, and you say, I'm going to leave for a few minutes, and if you won't eat that marshmallow, I'll give you more marshmallows when I get back, right? And this study was looking specifically at executive functioning skills, and Professor Walter Mischel at Stanford University did this in the 60s. He actually traced the results of that study when the kids were four all the way through to adulthood. And he found that executive functioning does lead, even, this was kind of scary because I'm thinking, oh gosh, are we determining from such a young age a person's success? But nevertheless, this set of skills matters for future success as an adult. So I believe that executive functioning is developmental readiness, that this is your set of skills. And research shows that it is heavily correlated with age. So yeah, age might not be everything, but if age and executive functioning skills go hand in hand, and research says that it does, then you could say that age is what matters, right? Another bit of research. Some of you might be familiar with Malcolm Gladwell's 2008 book called Outliers. He was famous for his study on National Hockey League players and showed that in Canada, if you want to play hockey, the league cuts off at January 1st. Guess who? Those children who grew up to play in the National Hockey League, guess when their birthdays were? You know this. I'm validating what you know. It's the oldest ones, the ones who had January, February, March birthdays. That's a little bit. I encourage you, if you're not familiar with that book, a great read. Let's look at Scandinavia for a minute. There was a 2015 Danish study titled The Gift of Time, showing a correlation between delayed school time and improved mental health, particularly as it regards inattention and hyperactivity. So just 1 year delaying, I don't know how many years you would delay, but if you delay 1 year, and then look at those children when they're 11, their likelihood to be categorized as having attention or hyperactivity issues for boys and girls was decreased by 73%. That's significant. That's a child showing up every day saying, I can go to school, I like school. And a child saying, I don't know, I'm just not good at it. And by the way, I don't like it. And by the way, she knows I don't like it, and now I don't like her, right? That's the difference. So when we look at the research between age and success, I want to show you a tiny little bit from our own school. I looked at 4 years, starting with my son's class in kindergarten and then kind of tracking them up. This is what I found. This is not a scientific study. This is just me pulling numbers. Our program is different than yours, which is different than theirs. You know, so you have to look at your own school and your own program. But I found that girls and boys with a June and July birthday at our school have a 27% chance of thriving. For girls and boys, 27. Do you know how fun that phone call is? Hi, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, you applied to our school. I see you've got a summer birthday. By the way, I'm Mrs. Wright. You've never met me before. I just wanted to let you know that your child has a 27% chance of doing well if you enroll right now. Yeah, it's not fun. I don't actually do it like that. I try to make sure I meet them and we're smiling and there's a meeting and handle that a little more gently. What about the boys, though? The boys, for those 4 years, who had a June and July birthday, by the way, we start at the 1st of August, and I think that's important. I'll talk about that in a second. Boys with June and July birthdays have a 12% chance of thriving in those first primary years. 12%. That's not good enough. It's not good enough for me as a mom. It's not good enough for me as an administrator. Again, that's our school. So let's talk a little bit more about boys and their academic success for just a minute. Ooh, just a very few minutes. I want you to think about the kids you had who struggled, maybe the one or two kids you had who struggled the most this year. Get their names and their sweet little faces in your mind. Then the one or two who struggled the most the year before. Okay, you have them? You ready? Raise your hands if they're all boys. Raise your hands if they're all girls. See that? I think there was one who said they're all girls, I think. Again, if they were all boys, if your strugglers were boys, okay? What if your strugglers for the last year or two were all girls? Okay, you see that? Okay. She said she had four students and three of them were girls and the boys started in the spring, so. Thank you. How very scientific of you. So I want to read for you a few. This book is called Saving Our Sons by Michael Gurian, G-U-R-I-A-N, Gurian. Saving Our Sons. A few statistics. And whew, we gotta be fast. Listen fast, please. For every 100 girls diagnosed with a learning disability, 276 boys are diagnosed with a learning disability. Our boys are not thriving. For every 100 girls diagnosed with emotional disturbance, is emotional stability important for learning? Yeah. So for every 100 girls diagnosed with an emotional disturbance, 324 boys are diagnosed with an emotional disturbance. For every 100 girls 3 to 5 years old with a developmental delay, 154 boys are developmentally delayed. In 2015, the world, not just our country, the World Health Organization published a study of men and boys' health worldwide, and this is their conclusion. In most of the world, girls and women are doing better than boys and men in both physical and mental health indicators. Our boys are not doing well, and our men are not doing well. And then again, this isn't just about school. Listen to this. Suicide kills approximately 30,000 American boys and men every year. And males kill themselves at 4 times the rate of girls. I'm sure there are many reasons for that. But our boys are not thriving. And we have to pay attention to them. We have to ask ourselves, what can we do differently for them? All right. Here's the fun part where I get to skip a bunch of stuff. I worked really hard to prepare for the sake of time. Okay. In Sweden, kids are starting school at age 7. In Switzerland, Germany, Russia, Australia, Japan, Finland, and Denmark, it's 6. Interesting thing about Denmark is the cutoff is you start in your 6th year. And so another way to think about it is you start when you're 5, but they cut off at January 1st. That's interesting. As a point of interest. In New Zealand, you start on your 5th birthday, which is kind of so fun. I just love that. But you don't start at the beginning of the year. Wherever you are in the school year, you start on your 5th birthday. And then in England and the U.S., we start at age 4 or 5, depending on when that cutoff is. And the trend over the last several decades in our country is moving that cutoff from October, some of you might remember that, up into August. That's just a trend. The trend for academic redshirting 20 years ago in our country, about 10%, mostly for boys. Now up to 20% as of 2014, which was the most recent I could find. Just a point of interest. I want to give you guys some best practices and then wrap up. And I'm sorry to rush through this part. I know this is the takeaway that is probably more meaningful to you. Set an earlier than later kindergarten birthday cutoff. I did a little bit of informal research with some ACCS schools and found, I didn't look at the cutoff, I looked at the gap between the cutoff and the start. So if you start in September, right, or you start August 1st, I mean, that's really different. So I looked at the gap, and I found that 2 schools said that they were content with their birthday cutoff date. 2 schools were happy with it, and they were the ones who had a 2-month gap between their cutoff. They had like June 1st cutoffs and weren't starting for a couple of months. Just as a point of interest, I have a lot more data there if you're interested in seeing it. I'm happy to share it. So set an earlier than later K birthday cutoff if you can. Some of you are in a position to do that, and some of you aren't, I understand. have an established standard for kindergarten enrollment, and make it widely known by everyone involved. Listen, your marketing person needs to know this stuff because they're out there, they're grabbing great families, they're marketing, they're putting the word out, and when they bring them to you, this is my case, our marketing person's great. We have a team, they're great. They bring us great families, and then we do a tour, and then they meet with me with assessment, and I'm like, actually, let's wait a year. How frustrating is that, right? Your marketing people need to know. If they're doing tours in your school and they're going out and they're reaching people, they need to be saying things like, we look at developmental readiness. Well, what does that mean? Glad you asked. Here are a couple quick things. It's great that your kid's 5, but what we're really looking for is developmental readiness. And here's the thing. Most of them will be ready at 5. Most of them. I'm not talking about most of them. Most of them are fine. I'm talking about the kids. In our case, the 4 boys out of 5, which was most of them that time, but it's not always the case. By the way, that was a really strange year for us. That's not normal. But we have to communicate. This has to be a team. Your teachers, I don't care if they teach senior rhetoric, word of mouth, they're recruiting families they know from church. They need to understand at least a little bit about this so they can get the word out in a helpful way. Another best practice is to have specific and reasonable standards for grade promotion. So this isn't just coming into school, coming into kindergarten, but what does it take to leave kindergarten? Is that on paper? Does everyone know what those standards are? Is everyone on board? Are they good standards? Create pre-K and kindergarten programs that emphasize development and not just academics, especially development through play. Go look at what the research says. Think about how their brains are forming and how important play is. Develop those programs. That's a big part of this conversation. And then have an assessment that you use. It can be teacher made. Lean on your teachers. They know what they're talking about. If that teacher's been in your classroom for a few years, a little while, lean on them. You can do a teacher made test. The GESELL, GESELL. Is a great test used by some ACCS schools. We did not adopt it this year because it's a little pricey, but we hope to, and the training and all of that. But it's a really great test, GESELL. And so here are a few last things. Let me go back to those 2 questions I had, okay? With our 5 boys in that class of 2027, and 4 of them did not thrive. Several left the school. Some left the school, like one left the school after being furious and frustrated for years, telling other parents about that, saying things to other parents like, this school is not a school for boys, which is heartbreaking, right? There's collateral damage sometimes involved in these mistakes that we make. But out of those 5 boys, listen to their birthdays. June. July, May, that one's mine. He's hanging in there, but he's not thriving. And February, he's fine. He's doing really well. Are you surprised? Am I surprised? No. Again, kindergarten teachers, you know this, right? You know this already. I want to validate what you already know. I also want to say that the Lord is sovereign over the lives of those children. Okay? And so they will be great. They have great godly parents, and I have confidence in that. The second question, how do I prepare my kid for Highland Rim Academy or your school? This is what I tell parents, 3 things. Please train them for first-time cheerful obedience. I'm not saying they're going to nail it. I'm saying make a good go at it. First-time cheerful obedience. Read to them as much as you possibly can. If there aren't stacks of torn-up books around your house, try that. Stacks of torn up books. Now, the books shouldn't come in torn up, but should get torn up as they are thrown across. I don't know. Are books thrown across your house or thrown across mine? That's the second thing. Read to them every chance you can get. And the third thing is get those little kids to use their bodies, the small parts and the big parts. Play-Doh, paint, go climb a tree, go get muddy, go find a frog, and then dissect it. They need to use their bodies. That is creating a container, getting them ready for a posture of learning. And so I don't know what will happen with our class of 2032, the class we're enrolling this year. Time will tell. We have just come to a place where we've revised this whole year. We totally revamped what we're doing to get our students in. We have three questionnaires. One goes to a child care provider of some kind to look at that social, emotional stuff. One goes to the parents, asking similar questions, but some other things. Can they tie their shoes? Do they use the bathroom by themselves? That's developmental. And then one that the teacher does when they come into the classroom. And we look at all of those things. We've made a lot of changes. And Mrs. Marsh, she stepped in. She's been working with me, and she's been doing all of that. Time will tell what comes of that. So I'm not standing here telling you we have all the answers. What I'm saying is ask these questions. Ask them to the right people. Administrators, listen. And if you have any questions, I know we're already running over on time, so thank you so much for staying. And I'm happy to stay for a few minutes and answer any questions that you have.